Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, March 15th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Ibotta Performance Network. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. Today's episode is The Retailer's Q4 Checkup. We did a Q3 checkup a quarter ago, go figure, and we're checking back in on some retailers' earnings to see what the state of retail is right now. Joining me for today's episode, we have one of our analysts, Zach Stambor. Hey, Zach.
Hey, Sarah.
Also joining us today is another one of our analysts from the short form team. It's Jeremy Goldman. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Sarah.
All right, let's get started with our first segment, News and Reviews, where I give the news and our guests tell me their reviews. Today's headline is a March 8th story from Business Insider titled, "Retail worker quits are on the rise again, even as workers in other industries increasingly try to hold on to their jobs." Retail workers are quitting their jobs at a higher rate than the rest of the workforce. Wages at a lot of retailers have increased significantly over the past 3 years, so since the start of the pandemic, in attempts to retain workers, but potentially not enough at a lot of these retailers. Zach, your review of this headline in 60 seconds is?
I actually don't think this is that surprising. It's still a super tight labor market. There's roughly 1.9 jobs for every person looking for a job. And as someone who has worked at Lids and at The Gap, retail jobs are not the most glamorous jobs. They're not the most fun jobs. And so if there's other opportunities out there, then people are going to start looking around. And this is the same sort of thing that's happening in the leisure and hospitality space, where companies ranging from like Domino's to Jack in the Box have said in their earnings that their inability to hire enough workers is hurting their bottom line.
I did not know that you worked at Lids and The Gap.
I worked at Lids for about a month and a half.
Okay.
Gap, I lasted a little bit longer.
Not a hat expert. Jeremy, your review of this headline in 60 seconds is?
You know, it's concerning, but also not entirely unexpected. I agree with Zach in that regard, because if you look at the fact that we have had, you know, a national joblessness rate at 3.4% or so, I think. It's currently at like a 50-year low, right? And you also have a lot of increasing income disparity in terms of how much people are being paid. So what that means is if you have a somewhat thankless job and you're not being paid that much and you have some hope that something else is going to pay you more, there's a very good chance that you're going to go look around, right? So it just makes a lot of sense. And I think that the overall employment change, basically employment growth, has been slowing down a little bit. So it remains to be seen if that's going to, you know, put like a bit of a lid, no pun intended, on this trend.
Yeah, I mean, the story emphasized how much wages have grown, but wages were so low 3 years ago when the pandemic hit. Like, they had to grow. The national minimum wage is like $7.25. So, like, sure, retailers are now offering several multiples of that. But, I mean, it's starting from such a low point that I don't think it's surprising that wages have grown as people have had more ability to move around in retail jobs. All right, now it's time for our next segment. Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail topic. Today's topic is the retailer's Q4 checkup. Q4 was challenging for retailers. Lower discretionary spending led to heavy discounting, and as a result, earnings have been not apocalyptic, but definitely not uplifting. We're going to discuss three themes that we saw from Q4 earnings: pullback in discretionary spending, a hurting housing market and how that affected retail, and overall price sensitivity. So we're going to start off with that first theme, pullback on discretionary spending. Can you guys give me examples of some companies that had earnings that highlighted this trend?
Yeah, so I would actually counter your introduction slightly. So Q4 was not terrible. Walmart and Target both exceeded expectations. But the overarching theme that we've seen is everyone is very cautious about the road ahead. So yes, they saw some pullback in discretionary spending, but they also are seeing some pickups in some of their specific areas that have opportunity right now. So for instance, with Walmart, Sam's Club's comparable sales were up like 12%. It saw an uptick in market share in terms of grocery sales, but Walmart also saw a slowdown in discretionary spending, and so their margins shrank.
Jeremy, anything to add to Walmart?
You know, just building on the Sam's Club point, I think what's interesting is that they said that their membership count reached an all-time high, you know, and I think that that's one of those things that just show that people are willing to actually pay into essentially loyalty programs in order to get some good value. You know, like people are doubling down on places that are serving them value, or at least like the perception of that value. I think that, you know, Target is able to also generate like a kind of fun shopping experience, even at a discount, right? So, you know, when we're talking about some of the things that they're doing right, I think that they had a number of different things like their in-store pickup and their drive up, these same day services that helped people, you know, from an ease of use standpoint, they all went up during the quarter. They increased, I think, like 4.5% almost. So, you know, there are some bright spots, you know, where people essentially want to get some value and they want to have a good time doing it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you bring up loyalty. We talked about this on our loyalty episode. Our own like BizRates Insight survey data showed that younger people in particular were becoming members of Walmart's loyalty program at a much higher rate this holiday season than they were in July. So definitely seeing that trend in our own data.
So Walmart in particular is looking ahead and seeing the expiration of the expanded SNAP benefits, which expired at the start of March. And it's a fairly decent share of their grocery sales are those lower income people who are using those benefits. And so that could hurt their sales looking ahead.
That's interesting. Definitely something to watch.
And it's not just them, it's Kroger and many other grocers.
Yeah, that will definitely be something we will check back in on in our Q1 retailer checkup. Let's move on to our second theme that we discussed, which is how the housing market had an effect on earnings this season. What are some examples of retailers where we saw that trend highlighted?
Well, nobody's moving because interest rates are so high. Home values are down, so nobody's putting their house up for sale and just few houses are selling. And so Lowe's and Home Depot and furniture retailers like Wayfair and many others are just not selling as many of the goods that people generally buy when they move and buy a new house. So at Home Depot and Lowe's, it might be paint or fixtures or whatever it might be. For furniture sellers, you know, all the furniture that you need to outfit your house.
Yeah, there's definitely, and this is what's interesting, is that these are sectors that can do very well or very not so amazing, depending on what else is happening. And, you know, besides even the interest rates, how about the fact that, you know, we were talking about wage gains? Well, there are people who are making more, but their effective earning power isn't necessarily as much, which then means that they can't, you know, make payments if they are going to buy something. So, yeah, so all of these things go into the housing market and then affect all of these brands like, you know, a Sherwin-Williams that's carried in some of these major housing-based retailers, you know, home improvement retailers like Lowe's and Home Depot, they see an outsized impact of this type of slowdown.
And all these companies did really, really well early in the pandemic when everyone was stuck at home. And so people already have redone their living room. They have already done and made the purchases that you don't buy again. You know, once you have painted your living room, you generally don't paint your living room again 1 year or 2 years later. You generally don't redo your bathroom 1 or 2 years later. And so they have some tough comps for the next few years.
So both Lowe's and Home Depot fell short of expectations. That we think is a direct result of this housing market right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to our third and final trend of this segment, which is just general price sensitivity. I mean, Jeremy, you just mentioned wages are going up in some places, but we also know that food prices have been aggressively high for the last several months now. So how did price sensitivity affect this earnings season?
You know, you kind of see this in a few different places. And I mean, one of those is you have some retailers like Macy's, for instance, which has brands underneath it like Bluemercury and Bloomingdale's, where those were the best performing parts of their portfolio, right? Then you have some retailer stocks, you know, like TJX, which has a number of different things underneath its umbrella, TJ Maxx, Marshall's among them, that they stand to benefit in the long term, but also the fact that they're going to actually be able to, you know, outperform some of the rest of the market. You know, like TJX reported a 5% jump in sales and I think more than $1 billion in its most recent quarter, you know, by simple virtue of the fact that there are some people who might be trading down. And for some people who might otherwise just, you know, be transacting in a few different retailers, they might be cutting out some retailers and continually transacting with the TJX.
TJX really epitomizes what's going on because the clothing-oriented stores, TJ Maxx and Marshalls, did well. Their sales were up like 7%, but Home Goods, Home Fashion's business, saw its sales decline 7%. So it is very much in line with this overarching trend that we've seen.
Is Home Goods in line with a Wayfair, Home Depot, a Lowe's, or not so much since it's more home decor rather than home furniture?
It's all of a piece. It is home decor, but people are just pulling back on home decor. And home decor is an easy place to pull back. And in fact, I think it's one of the areas people pull back first because it's okay if your wall is bare.
Yeah. I also think home decor probably more likely to be an impulse purchase as compared to a couch. And you're probably not going to make that impulse purchase right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially at a retailer like Home Goods, where it's all about the hunt.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that is all we have time for in the first half. We'll be talking about some more retailers' earnings in the second half. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, Ibotta Performance Network. Are you looking to increase your brand's awareness and guarantee units sold for every dollar spent on promotions? Meet the Ibotta Performance Network. Advertisers on the IPN see an average 7 times return on ad spend and an average 47% lift in incremental units sold. Start seeing the return on ad spend your brand deserves with Ibotta Performance Network today. Visit ipn.ibotta.com/emarketer today to learn more. That's ipn.ibotta.com/emarketer. Welcome back from the break. Now it's time for Pop-Up Rankings, Earnings Awards Edition, where we take a look at the two best and the two most concerning retailer performances as of late and give them awards. So first, we're going to give awards to our two most impressive retailers of Q4 2022. Zach, what is one of our most impressive retailers of the last quarter?
Dick's Sporting Goods had a really impressive quarter. It really surprised me. Their same store sales grew 5.3% year over year, which was like over double analysts' estimates. And they're in a tough category. Their sporting goods is a category where sales declined last year, but they're the last big box brand standing. And that's a good spot to be because if you need a basketball, if you need Nike shoes, if you need who knows what, that's where you're going to go. They also said something super interesting in the call, which was that people are starting to view some of the fitness and sports-related purchases that they started buying over the pandemic as a necessity rather than a discretionary purchase. So people are going to keep buying their running shoes, even if they're pulling back in other areas.
Yeah, anything associated with health or wellness right now seems like a really convincing category to be in.
Absolutely.
We have Dick's getting one of our awards. Jeremy, who else is getting a most impressive retailer award?
So I would say Kroger, even though we talked about the fact that there are some things that they have to deal with, just namely the fact that the SNAP benefits that Zach mentioned, that's a call out for the future. But they beat Wall Street's expectations for Q4. You know, their stock went up as a result. They had a number of different things that went well, including they had their same store sales go up. They continue to be a really interesting retail media player to watch. And that's something that we're paying attention to because it is more profitable if you can basically sell ads and if you can diversify your business. So that's something that I think is very interesting. And then also, compared to a lot of other retailers, they have done a good job at managing their retail e-commerce sales. And we expect, according to our forecast, those to go up about 9% this year, outpacing their same store sales. So that's another interesting thing that we would probably say that's a feather in their cap.
Okay, so we have Kroger. Real quick, putting both of you on the spot, will the Kroger-Albertsons deal go through this year?
No. I was on the podcast, I don't know, how many months ago,
yeah,
saying no. And
yeah,
I still
you were.
Say no.
I want to, well, since you put me on the spot, I'm going to say yes, but I have not a really great handle on it. There's not a ton of evidence to, I think, say either way. And I think it might be like a little bit more of a toss-up rather than a definitive.
Either way, as both of you have said to me, the fact that that deal even exists shows how important retail media is in grocery, how important having these massive ad networks is.
It's absolutely a huge piece of that puzzle.
Okay, we have our two most impressive retailers, Dick's and Kroger. What about our two most concerning retailers? Zach, give me the first one.
Yeah, Wayfair, again, is in a tough space. Furniture, home furnishings is not a great category to be in. They're just hemorrhaging customers at this point. Their customer acquisition costs are just too high. And also, they about a year ago started talking a lot about physical retail as a potential growth channel. Their first Wayfair branded store is actually going to be like a mile, 2 miles from my house. It is now delayed until 2024. It's a very slow go, and I just don't see how they're going to turn it around.
Yeah, and I know a couple weeks ago you were on the podcast talking about Wayfair as a concerning retailer, so definitely sticking with that trend.
Yeah.
Jeremy, what is our second most concerning retailer of Q4?
I would say Best Buy is a good one to watch, a bit concerning, just because their U.S. sales fell quite a bit. You know, almost 10% soft spending on a lot of things that people just kind of felt, okay, I can put off this purchase. You know, just that's something that obviously is concerning, especially considering how those are purchases that are often made in Q4, right? So the other thing that I think makes them a bit concerning is just that, you know, experiential purchases, in theory, like if you're buying like a really major home theater type of setup, you know, you want to buy that at somewhere where you can have an experience and where you can really get a sense of what that's going to be like in your home. And if Best Buy isn't able to capitalize on that, that's a big problem because they have a pretty big, you know, retail footprint. And it's obviously very costly to manage that number of stores. So essentially, they have this advantage that for some reason, they haven't really been able to tap into. And I think that hopefully there'll be better days ahead for them. But I think it's definitely one to watch.
I want to call out that we give them a most impressive in Q3. So clearly, a lot of those sales maybe ate into Q4.
Yeah, I think the thing is they are just in a tough category. Consumer electronics, it's like I was saying, when you buy paint once every, I don't know, 10 years, you buy a TV every 4 to 10 years. So once you bought it during the pandemic, you just aren't going to buy another TV. That said, they are a very well-run company. They had a tough quarter. But they are making some moves to diversify their business in a way that might help them over both the short and the longer term. So, for instance, they recently announced a deal where they're diversifying into like at-home healthcare, where the Geek Squad helps like set up
like
devices.
Home health devices,
yes,
biometric tracking devices.
Yes.
Yeah. I also saw some news last week about their retail media network as well. They made some moves there. So also another place where they're investing in their ad network.
Yeah. And also, again, like Dick's, it is helpful to be the last brand standing. So when somebody does need a TV or a washing machine, they might go to Best Buy because there just aren't that many other places to go.
Okay, well, that is all we have time for today. So thank you for joining me, Zach.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And thank you, Jeremy.
Pleasure as always.
Please give us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on Instagram at behindthenumbers_podcast. Also, join eMarketer at the Commerce Next e-commerce growth show on June 20th through 21st in New York City. We'll be moderating the e-commerce experience panel with speakers from DSW, Shiseido, and Kendo Brands. Learn from over 120 industry-leading speakers across more than 50 sessions. Scaled retailers and brands get free admission. Go to commercenext.com/conference and use the VIP code eMarketer to register for your complimentary ticket today. Check out the link in the description to learn more. Thank you, listeners, and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and had a great Q4. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Ibotta Performance Network. And tomorrow, you can join Marcus for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily.